Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is what's not thought? And the numbers to call to talk about thought and thinking and having what you want and thriving are 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to start the show by kind of setting the table a little bit, talking about our theme. But before I do, I want to tell you about a couple things we have coming up. So Saturday and Sunday, this Sunday, Steve Chandler and I will be leading a writer's weekend here in Los Angeles. If you would like to join us live, you can go to michaelneal.org/writer. And you can also actually join us virtually. We're going to have an interactive live stream for the event. So you can actually join us from anywhere in the world. So again, that's michaelneal.org/writer. The other thing we're coming up against this month in terms of a deadline, we're doing early enrollment for Supercoach Academy 2018. And if you would like to have a session with me as part of your early enrollment, I'm going to be out of sessions by the end of the month. So that would be something you would find out more about at supercoachacademy.com. So, what's not thought? Well, the idea for this is a topic came in a conversation that I was having with one of the people I work with, and we were saying that the basic course in the inside out understanding, right? The basic course in living from the inside out is we live 100% of the time in an experience of this spiritual energy of thought taking form in the moment. So there's this invisible Play-Doh, this invisible raw material that we call universal thought. And it can take literally any form. So it takes this formless energy behind life and it gives it form. Thought is the missing link between the formless world, the spiritual world, and the world of form, the world that we all sort of think we inhabit. And so the quick answer to the question, what's not thought, is, well, nothing. Everything is made of thought. In everything that has a form, everything is made of thought. But it doesn't look like it. In fact, most things look like things. They look like they're solid. They look like they're not thought. And the advanced course, by the way, is no, really, every experience that you have, every feeling that you have, is an experience of this energy of thought taking form. It's a feeling of thought moving through your system. And to begin to see, here's the first place that it becomes easy to see thought, or easier, because it's invisible. Right. So I sometimes use the analogy of the invisible man, that if you've ever watched any of the Invisible Man movies, right, they have to do something in order to make him visible. And so they might dress him up in clothes, or if he walks through steam, you can see the outline of him. Or if he walks through a sprinkler, you can see the outline of him. Well, that's essentially what we do through this conversation, is we try to make the invisible visible. Because when we start to make the invisible visible, then we're not so freaked out when chairs and tables start moving around on their own and, you know, glasses are floating through the air and all the other things that happen when there are invisible forces behind the scenes and we don't see them. So that first test, that first, you know, check is, can you put it in a wheelbarrow? Now, there are certainly things you can put in a wheelbarrow. You can probably put your mother in a wheelbarrow. I don't recommend it, but you probably can do it. And so it would be easy to say, well, therefore, my mother is not made of thought. Well, we're going to come back to that. But let's just take a look at all the things that we can't put in a wheelbarrow that seem real and solid and fixed to us. Things like death. Things like love. Things like confidence. Things like disappointment. Right? Those all feel real. We talk about things like success and failure. Things like disappointment and guilt and shame. We talk about them as though they're solid and fixed, but they're made entirely of thought and not other people's thought. They're made of our thinking in the moment, and we're living in the feeling of that thinking, even though the human system is so brilliantly designed that it makes it feel like, it makes it seem like it's coming at us. All that stuff is just there, when in fact, it's being created from inside us. Now, we're going to come back and talk about that in different ways, but if you want to get in, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And let's begin in Dallas with Tambi. Tambi, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This has been an issue for me forever because I love the thinking of the Hay House office, the powerful, all the good that comes out of it, the way that somebody takes up something and helps me think about it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I recognize that my thinking is destructive and I name and label something. Help.
Well, so tell me a little bit more about what you mean when you say your thinking is destructive.
Somebody, a perceived wrong that somebody may have done that, it's a perceived wrong. It wasn't a wrong or right. It was a perceived wrong.
So here's my first question. Why does seeing that not do more for you? Like, if you can see, oh, it's not that they really did wrong, it just looks that way in my head. Why does that not take care of it in and of itself? For example, like, if I thought there was a monster in my closet, and then I rubbed my eyes and looked again and realized it was a shadow, I don't have to do anything about it once I see it.
I guess it's like fear and anger. You know, like, I fly for and travel, but when I get in a turbulent flight, I can say, I'm going to be okay, and I'm... But then the anxiety of that turbulence, I feel my palms sweat a little bit, I feel nervous. Mm-hmm. Okay, calm down, land, and we're going to be fine. And yet I still feel the anxiety rising. So even perceived... perceived, I don't know what else to call it, but perceived wrongs, there's still a physical and sometimes a mental response that lingers. And even when I know that thought or the fear is unreasonable.
Okay, so why would reasonable fear be different to unreasonable fear?
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, that's good, because that might mean we can see something new there. What do you think?
An unreasonable fear is when I know it's wrong and I still hang on to it. And then I think that's unreasonable.
Okay.
So let's say
let me ask it like this. If you were at a movie and there was something scary in the movie.
Yes.
Now, you know it's a movie.
Perfect example.
But you still feel scared, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But here's the thing. You don't try to fix it. You just wait till the movie's over. Or till the next scene comes on.
Okay.
You don't have to do anything about it because you see it for what it is. So it's not that seeing it for what it is automatically means you won't feel it, because that's the human system in action. Right? Thought combines with this energy of thought, combines with this capacity of consciousness, like a special effects department in a movie, and it makes us feel it in our body. That's how we're designed, so that we experience thought as if it's really happening. But knowing that doesn't mean we have to control it. It just means we don't have to worry about it. It's like you travel a lot, right? So do you ever fly through clouds?
Yes.
That's a perfect example, right? Think of thought like the clouds that you fly through. They look solid, right? You've probably had that experience of thinking, oh man, it looks like I could just take a nap on one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But you also kind of know you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know that actually you'll pass right through them, and it might be a little bumpy, there might be a little bit of turbulence, but fundamentally you're passing through something that has no substance, and so you can feel it, but that doesn't mean you got to do anything about it. You don't need to avoid it, you don't need to change it, because you know how it works. You're free to fly through it and occasionally experience turbulence, and fly above it and occasionally think, oh, how beautiful, and fly beneath it and occasionally think, oh, how drab.
Yeah, and not react to it. So I think what as you're coming through this, I what jumps out at me is that I react to something, not just the physical reaction, but to respond or react when I need to just fly through it.
Well, right. And that's the funny thing is, you know, one of my favorite quotes, it's at the beginning, I put it at the beginning of the Inside Out Revolution, is from one of my teachers, Sid Banks. And he said, if the only thing people learned was not to be afraid of their own experience, that alone would change the world. Right? It's not a problem that sometimes you feel scared or angry or judgmental or any of the things that all human beings feel. Because they're temporary. They're clouds. They're transient. They come and they go. They're a movie.
Wow.
And that means you're free. You don't have to try and control this ongoing. I mean, it you know, to try and control our thinking is kind of like asking ourselves to control traffic. Right? That's not how it works. And if you try to control traffic, you might get cars to stop for a while if you just stand there in the middle of the street. But then they'll start again. And hopefully not too many of them will hit you. But it's just a bad idea.
Wow. That was powerful. That is incredible. That's what I needed to hear.
Well, there you go. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
You know, it's funny because we when we think thought is solid, when we think there's a problem with feeling stuff, we get ourselves into trouble. Because it's natural then, if I think it's a problem, I've got to try to do something about it. Right? If I think, you know, in one of my other books, In the Space Within, I share a phrase, there's no such thing as a solution to a feeling. Well, what do you do about fear? Well, why would you do anything about fear? It'll come and go of its own accord if you let it. What do you do about anger? Again, if you don't think anger is a real thing, if you recognize it as a word we use to describe a feeling that comes from thought, which comes and goes of its own accord, well, then you get to feel angry when you're angry and not when you're not. And the payoff is by letting go of the illusion of control, we drop into our natural freedom. And not to be judgmental, but freedom beats the crap out of control. Like, if you'd like more joy in your life and more impact in your life and more success in your life and a richer experience of life, freedom smacks control out of the ballpark. Because control has a built-in tightness to it. Control limits us. This is just a metaphor. It's not true, but, you know, guards are just in as much in prison as prisoners, right? So when we play a control game, we are being controlled even as we try to control, because we are at the mercy of those things that we are trying to control, because we got to control them. Well, when you see, not only can you not really control thought for any length of time, but you don't have to. It's designed to flow through, like information through a wire, electricity through a wire. It sometimes it gets a little backed up and we feel that. We feel it as kind of like, and sometimes it just passes through and we feel it as this incredible flow. But that's freedom. And with that freedom, you start having a lot of creative thought that flows through, and the innate intelligence behind the system, the innate health of the system, lets you thrive. Let's go to Lake Geneva, I think in Wisconsin, not Switzerland, and talk to Judy. Judy, I just did something I don't think I've done in years, which is I just dropped you by mistake. I hit the drop instead of the bring on. So please do phone back, and I promise to try harder next time. In the meantime, let's go to Texas and let's talk to Alexis. Alexis, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. So my main question is, you know, I'm having a lot of negative anxiety-driven thoughts about the future, especially me graduating from school. And mm-hmm. I was listening to you talk about, you know, not trying to control those thoughts, but I'm wondering if there's a way to lead those thoughts in a more positive direction, because I have a feeling that those negative thoughts are really kind of bringing me down and attracting me to, like, the opportunities that I don't necessarily want.
Well, so that's interesting, because, and I know you kind of know this, but what you just said to me is, okay, so if we don't have to control our thoughts, how can I control my thoughts?
Yeah.
So let's just back that up a little. Here's the thing about the future. Whether we have, if we think, if we imagine, right, if we make up positive futures, we get a good feeling with that.
Mm-hmm.
If we make up bad futures, we get a bad feeling with that. But we're not right. actually getting any real information about the future. In other words, if I have a bad feeling when I think about the future, all that tells me is about my thinking about the future. And if I have a good feeling when I think about the future, all that tells me is I'm making up good pictures about the future. But what actually creates the future is the experience that we're having in the moment. It's what we do or don't do. And so the problem isn't so much how do I make up better futures. It's really seeing there's not a lot of value in making up the future at all. Because the future is inherently an incomplete equation. Because what we can never take into account when we think about the future is what's going to occur to us when we're there, what ideas we're going to have, what kind of thinking and feeling we're going to have when we get there, what kind of insights we'll have, who we will be. Like, there are situations, I'm sure, where you expected it to go one way and then you showed up and for whatever reason, you were just in a great state of mind and it went so much better than you thought. And then there were other times where you thought something was going to be no big deal and then you, for whatever reason, were all caught up in your head and it turned into a big deal. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why not only can't you control the future, but you're thinking about the future, but why it's not even relevant. Like, to an extent, if there was a relevance, it would just be to kind of notice, oh, I'm thinking about the future a lot, or I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And not to think, well, A, my thinking about the future is prescient. It's in some way telling me what's really going to happen. Nor being afraid that just because I have some icky thoughts about the future right now, that means the future will be icky. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see.
And see, then you're off the hook. You are no longer in the job of prognosticator, right? You no longer have to play psychic. You're free to enjoy your life and respond to opportunity. Because the funny thing is, as we get out of our heads and are more present to the moment, we start seeing opportunities everywhere.
Wow. Yeah. And
that's how the future gets created.
Okay. So I just, it's kind of more so about just kind of surrendering to that present moment.
Well, you tell me if what creates the future isn't our thinking about the future, but it's our receptivity and adaptivity to the present, where do you want to hang out?
Definitely in the present.
Right. So it's not about surrendering to the present like a victim of a, like a prisoner of war.
Right.
It's like the present is where the sex is. The present is where the good stuff is. The present is where the presents are. Right? Like on Christmas morning, you probably don't think, I better surrender to the presents. Right? You're like, ooh, presents. Awesome.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
And from that place, it becomes as natural to be more in the present as it is to choose food you like over food you don't like.
Mm.
Or pick a movie that you want to see over a movie you don't want to see. Right? That doesn't take effort. That doesn't take discipline. That doesn't take willpower. That's just common sense.
I see. Wow. Yeah.
Wow is the really wow is the right answer. Because when you start to see, oh my God, it's all made up. It's all created. Well, there's so much more that becomes possible than it looks like when we think, well, okay, this is fixed and this is fixed and this is fixed and this is fixed. But within that little cage, I need to, what can I do? You're not in a cage. Your mind is already free and you can think anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that helps me a lot.
Very cool, Alexis. Feel free to call back anytime.
Okay, thank you so much for your guidance.
All right. You know, there's that's just a really, oh my God, it's so liberating when you start to see that. And if you've heard both of our callers so far, they've gone, wow. Right. Well, that's how I know that somebody's really seeing something about this is because it's when you start to see, oh my God, it's all up for grabs. Nothing is a given at the level of form that, well, I just have to deal with this. You're in the world of infinite potential and in the world of infinite possibilities. Let's go to. Ah, thank you, Judy. Thanks for phoning back. So I owe you one, Judy. What are we going to talk about? Sorry, I hung up on you.
Oh, that's all right. I am so excited to talk to you and hear your possible fix on something.
Okay.
So the creative process in regards to thought, creative flow is not where I can get stuck. It flows quite frequently and it seems to be that I'm stuck in a technique, and maybe that's my problem. And what I mean, what my specific question is I can be, I'll have an idea. Let's say I have a marketing program that I'm putting together, and as I think about it, I can see it. I can visualize it, an end-to-end process all the way through. And it's exciting. My heart can race. I can be so excited about it. When I go to put it on paper, it's like it bursts as if I've interrupted myself. And I'll stop right there, and you can ask me a question if you need more clarity.
Sure, yeah. So what do you make of that? Like, what do you think's going on?
Well, I don't think it's Well, I tried techniques where I think, all right, maybe I have to keep talking about it, so I'll do the audio notes instead of thinking that it's my writing that it interrupted. But recently, in listening to some of your more recent podcasts, I'm thinking that there's a thought there that's interrupting, and I can't grasp what that is.
Well, I guess here's maybe a different question, which is, why do you think writing it down would be a good idea in the first place?
So that it can take form.
Well, but don't you want it to take form in the form of action, not in the form of a written plan?
Yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking about my car's GPS. Now, it seems to know where I'm going. Like, I tell it where I want to go, and it, but all it tells me is what to do next. And in fact, if I had to track every turn, it would be much harder, right? If I had to keep track, like in the old days, like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, probably, you know, where you'd print something off of Google Maps or Yahoo Maps or MapQuest or one of those things, and you print off the directions, and then you had to keep checking it to see what was going to be next. Okay. And what's going to be the next thing. And it made it harder to just drive. Whereas now with GPS, it's so streamlined that literally you don't even have to think about it. It'll just tell you when to turn. Like, what if that's how your marketing plan is going to come into form? Is, yeah, okay, you've thought about it. You've kind of got a sense of it. But then all you really need is the next step.
Yeah, and do you think it's one thought I've had is how you help in when you try to approach a project, an idea, and you can think it all the way through, and it's so big that it can keep you from approaching it because it's too overwhelming, and so to break it down.
So, yeah, I mean, look, it's absolutely, Judy, you know, your particular thing with it, I don't know, right? We all have our particular peculiarities. But generally speaking, if what you want is to market a product or market yourself or market whatever it is that you want to market, you do that by taking whatever the step in front of you is. Right? That's how it happens. I mean, it sounds so mundane, but you know, things happen. We get somewhere one step at a time. We don't get somewhere by having a written plan and thinking, ah, now I have a written plan. It's like, great, you've got a written plan, and you still won't get anywhere until you start walking. So do you know, let's try it this way. Do you know what your next step is? Like literally what the first thing to do is with whatever project it is that you're thinking about.
Yeah. If I'm putting together a proposal, I need to make my ideas. I need to be able to present them.
Well, hang on. Do you have a proposal, a specific proposal that you're wanting to put together?
Yes.
Okay, great. So give me you can make up stuff about it if it's confidential, but give me an idea of what are you proposing to whom?
Proposing basically to join a team to say, I have an idea that I think will further your mission, and this is why I think I would be of value, and this is the idea that I have.
Great. And so are you going to do that in the form of an email or a letter, or how are you going to, or are you going to call them?
Yes, I will send it to them.
Okay, great. So have you drafted a version of it yet?
A few.
Okay. And what do you like, not like about the versions you've done so far?
They don't look as creative as what I have in my mind.
Great. So Do you think that if you came at it fresh tomorrow, you might get a fresh idea?
Yes, that's helped to walk away.
And here's what I'm thinking. I'm currently in about the sixth rewrite of my new book, which is coming out in September, right? So it's, you know, it's imminent. It's still not quite where I want it to be, but I know that if I keep working on it, stepping away, coming back to it, stepping away, coming back to it, it'll get there. Because that's how the creative mind works. It tries stuff, and it picks up the bits that are working, and it does more of that. And it picks up the bits that aren't working and does less of that. And over time, it gets shaped into something that I like. And that's how I know, okay, it's now I need to send it out into the world and see what it does. But that's not, my thinking about it more is not going to help. It's kind of my going back to the drawing board that's going to help. And the great thing about the drawing board is you can go back to it 50 times. You can go back to it 500 times. It's just rarely do you need to. Like, what if it were that simple? What if this wasn't a Judy problem? What if this wasn't a psychology problem? What if this really was as simple as, oh, yeah, it's the creative process. You kind of have to muck about with stuff, and then it starts to take shape, and then you can refine it, and then you have something. Like, that's how everything gets created.
It's starting to feel a little bit more like keep moving forward and breaking it down. And if I can't put it all down in one shot, that put down what it is that's coming to mind, and then that's there. And then the flow will continue, and then come back to it and stick it on again.
That's how literally everything gets created. Now, is it true that occasionally you lay something down the first time and you, oh, yeah, I like that. Sure. But that's the exception, not the rule.
All right. Well, your calmness helped. I knew it would.
Well, thank you, Judy. So good luck with it.
I just would like to tell you that what I really, really enjoy about your podcast is that the principles that you teach through your writing, you know, through your published book, I love to listen to the podcast, because when someone poses a question, it's so helpful to hear your response to it. I just wanted you to know that I know that you have to take time to do this, but it has really helped me, and I know millions of others.
Oh, thank you, Judy. That's very kind. You know, one of the things that is disappointingly simple about creating in the world is really all there is to it is show up and try stuff. like, and I mean, I catch myself out, right? There's some things where I think, no, I have to know how to do this. I have to already have all the answers. It has to come out beautifully and live up to my standards. The truth is, most stuff first time out is going to be a little bit crap, right? And then if you do it enough, it'll be less crap. And at a certain point, depending on how high a standard you have, you'll look at it and you'll go, yeah, this is good. I've been talking to a bunch of people about this lately. I was talking to a CEO as part of a coaching program I was doing, and he was talking about having high standards but low expectations for others. And what I suggested to him is he might want to start having high standards and low expectations for himself too. To raise his standards but lower his expectations. And what I meant was, it's great if you've got high standards for your work. It's going to lead to better and better quality work. I'm a big fan of high standards. But having a high standard doesn't automatically raise the level of your current ability. Having a high standard doesn't suddenly mean your first go at something's going to be great. It just gives you something to aim for. It gives you a direction to move in. And if you let your expectations, they don't have to drop through the floor. I mean, I'm personally a fan of not having any, but just at least lower down to reality. Like, I've done this twice. I'm probably not going to be one of the world's masters at it. Whereas when I've done it 10,000 times, I may well be one of the world's masters at it. Then you don't turn everything into a referendum on your self-worth. You can just create. You can just try stuff. And sometimes it'll work and sometimes it won't. And you'll learn. You'll be on a learning curve. And the more you're willing to try stuff and fail and try stuff and fail and try stuff and succeed and try stuff and fail, the faster the learning curve will be, the steeper it will be. And the sooner your output will start matching up to your standards. Let's go out to Vegas. Let's speak to Deirdre. Deirdre, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Well, I wanted to talk to you today about, like you were talking about thoughts. And for me, every day I feel like Groundhog Day because I have these thoughts that are positive and empowering. On my way to pick up my kids from school, I have a 2- and a 4-year-old. And every day I'm like, I'm going to be calm. I'm going to let things just be. And by the time I get them in the car, I'm already yelling. And every day I do this. Mm-hmm. And because my 2.5-year-old is, they're both boys, and he is a tough one. He's tough, which it is what it is. But I feel like I'm failing every day, and I feel like I don't know how to stay in that good space. I feel like my systems get jammed, and I feel like I have all these great intentions. I listen to Hay House, and I feel enlightened, and then I see them, and I forget everything, and I just blow up. So
I remember Marianne Williamson saying once that the measure of your level of enlightenment is, you know, how you react when you're cut off in traffic.
Well, then I'm screwed.
Well, no, but no, but what I mean is, okay, let me back it up. So here's what I heard you say. And I'm obviously going to be tilting the way I say it, okay? Mm-hmm. On my way to school, I make up fluffy pink bunny rabbit stories about how wonderful, perfect Deirdre's going to be with her perfect little angels. And then I meet my kids and I don't like the way I am when I'm with them.
Yes.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah, because I know I'm not fluffy. I know that I get like, I'm so loving and they feel loved and safe, but I get really pissed. I have like a short view sometimes.
Okay, so where do you think pissed comes from?
I don't know. I just feel like because I can't control situations. And when they're screaming and things like something will happen and then they're screaming and temper tantrums and things don't make sense, I'm like, I'm just asking you to hold your hand and cross the street. And then there's a fight and I just want it to happen.
Right. So there's a difference, though, between wanting something to happen and being upset and angry when it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So why, if you really can't control it, why would not being able to control it be upsetting?
Because I feel like there's a way that I can control in a way that where I'm just, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that might be worth taking a fresh look at. Because, like, I saw a thing on Facebook today that said it was actually from a submarine commander, and it was and it said, if you could control other people, they'd come with a remote.
Yeah.
See,
and I guess yeah.
Well, let me just take it a step on, and then you tell me what you hear, okay?
Okay.
So it seems to me that my feelings of frustration, anger, angst, self-loathing, you know, whatever I can come up with, those all come from my thinking. That's the only place they can come from. That's just how the system is set up. We feel our thinking.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I kind of don't need to do anything about it because it's just, it's all happening in my head anyways. But on the other hand, if I can see, like really see, like see for myself insightfully, realize that I don't control my thinking, I don't control my moods, and I don't control my kids. That takes all three of those jobs off my plate. Now, if I don't have those jobs to keep me busy, then I can actually look at, I wonder what else might occur to me to kind of get my kids on side and coming across the street. I wonder what else might occur to me to distract them from their moods and thinking and get them more present and into their own natural joy. I wonder what it'll be like this time. Like, what if it was okay to be surprised by how you behave, by how you feel, by how your kids behave and how you feel and how they feel. So that instead of Groundhog Day, you're like, I can't think of a movie equivalent, but you know, some movie where the character is so innocent that they literally never know what's going to happen. Like Being There. I don't know if you ever saw that movie with Peter Sellers. So it's actually a great fun movie. It's about a complete innocent who winds up becoming president of the United States because everyone thinks that he's brilliant when he's actually just simple. But what if it actually became a curious thing? Like, I wonder what'll happen. Instead of a control thing, like, how do I make me behave and how do I make my kids behave? Because it's pretty frustrating to try to control things you don't control.
It is. And how could I relate what you just said? Like, when I'm in the car and my two-year-old is screaming for me to go nonstop, and it's loud, and and I almost feel like I can't think straight. And so how would I, in those moments, how could I apply that? Because I love that. I just don't know.
Well,
how
did
to
you
do
ever
it.
Did you ever listen to heavy metal music?
Yeah.
Now, were you able to get on with your life while it was playing?
I don't think so. I think I just listened.
Right, but I mean you know, if you were playing it in your car, could you still drive safely?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right. Well, the only difference between heavy metal music and your two-year-old screaming is that you think your two-year-old shouldn't be screaming.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, basically, your two-year-old is Steven Tyler. He's you know, he's whoever.
That's awesome.
Right? And in the same way as you can rock out to a band and drive and have a great time, you can rock out to your two-year-old screaming. You can scream with him, scream along.
I do sometimes. I yell out the ABCs, like really loud.
But see, that wouldn't, if it was music coming out of the radio, you wouldn't think twice about it.
I never thought of that. That's true. That's funny. Okay.
All right, so I'm thinking drive time's going to be fun.
I'm thinking it's going to be interesting today. I'm going to try. I'm going to look at my kid and be like, you are Steven Tyler, and I'm going to rock out with you.
Let's see what happens. Let me know. Phone back in.
I will. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
You know, it would be really easy to hear that and go, oh, yes, good technique. I must turn my people into characters from a movie or a rock band. It's not about that. It's just about noticing that, but for our thinking, it doesn't really matter what's going on around us. It doesn't, you know, in some moods, in some states of mind, you know, the world can seem to be falling apart and it's fine. And in other moods, if one thing is a little bit off, you lose it. Well, that's a subtle clue that we're not reacting to the world. We're just reacting to thought in the moment. In fact, we're not even reacting to thought. Thought is our reaction. thought and feeling are two sides of the same coin. It's not really that thought creates feeling. Thought has a feeling to it. Right? So if you think of, I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but like stroking a piece of crushed velvet, right? The velvet's not causing the feeling of the velvet. The velvet just has a feel to it. Thought has a feel to it. And so there are thoughts that have kind of a, what we would describe as an angry feel to them, and there are thoughts that have a scary feel to them, and there are thoughts that have a lovely feel to them, and there are thoughts that have a funny feel to them, and there are thoughts that have a happy feel to them. But underneath all that thought feeling is our own innate well-being, is the simplicity of our own nature, is the aliveness of us. And when we're not caught up in trying to control what things feel like, well, I want crushed velvet to feel like this. Well, good for you. You know, I want a Tony Award. You know, it doesn't work that way. But it doesn't have to. Because when I see it for what it is, when I see that it's all thought and thought comes and goes, it's all thought, but I can always think again. It's all thought, and I don't know what I'm going to be thinking in 10 minutes. So I don't know what the feeling of me is going to be in 10 minutes. Or in 11 minutes. Or in 12 minutes. Or in 5 seconds. And that's what I'm pointing to when I talk about how a whole different experience of being alive is never more than one thought away. Because with the very next thought will come the very next feeling. And sometimes people hear that and they go, okay, well, how do I make sure my next thought is a positive one? Well, why would you want to do that when there'll be another thought along right after that one? Now, here's what's really cool about the system. Here's part of what I talk about and think about is the kindness of the design. Is that there is a natural movement towards equilibrium, towards health, towards thriving. That left to our own devices, when we take our hands off the imaginary steering wheel of thoughts, where we're trying to make the thoughts all go right and none of them go left, all go positive and none of them go negative, all go hopeful and none of them go hopeless. When we take our hands off that imaginary steering wheel, it turns out the car is already on a set of tracks taking us somewhere wonderful. It turns out the intelligence behind the system is already bringing us more helpful thinking, more useful thinking. It's an adaptive intelligence. It's designed so that we thrive as best we can wherever we are, whatever's happening. Some of my colleagues describe it as that, you know, the mind is designed for success. I think of it as that we're designed to thrive. And what gets in the way is that we want to control it with our little brains, which don't have visibility on the big picture. Our little brains are kind of stuck in our psychology. They're trying to make all the decisions with limited data. Right? It's like, I don't know if you've ever gotten in an argument with your GPS. I have. Right? The GPS doesn't care. Right? You can ignore the GPS all you want, and it'll just keep recalculating. And that's the beauty, is we can ignore our inner wisdom. We can ignore our inner guidance. We can ignore it for 40 years, and it will still recalculate. And it will still give us the next step. The next thing to do for us to get where we want to go. I went to the market, the supermarket, the other day, and I saw somebody outside the market, and I'm in Southern California, and it's not too bad today, but it was in the 90s already, and it was pretty hot, and there was a guy there, and he was in a uniform, not a military uniform, but like a charity uniform, a Salvation Army type thing, and it looked really hot, like a wool uniform in 90 plus degree weather. And worse still, he was carrying some sort of a, you know, give us money thing. And everybody was like head down, avoiding him. Or if he spoke to them, they were like, you know, making faces. And my first thought was, man, that must be soul destroying. But my second thought was, well, why? Like his experience of being there that day was 100% an experience of his thoughts. And if he was thinking fuzzy velvet thoughts, he'll have been having a fuzzy velvet experience. And if he was thinking beautiful puppy dog thoughts, he was having a beautiful puppy dog experience. And if he wasn't thinking very much at all, he was just having an experience of the energy of life. And he was probably feeling a bit of the connection with humanity and with his larger mission and with his inner call that got him to be there that day. And if he was thinking dark thoughts, he was feeling dark feelings. And if he was thinking futile thoughts, he was feeling futile feelings. And it had nothing to do with what he was wearing, with the weather, or with how people appeared to be reacting to him. Now, what's interesting is their reactions had nothing to do with him either. Because they were reacting to the version of him that they made up in their thinking. And if they made him up really wonderful, and like, oh, well, how great this guy's doing that, then they probably were the ones that smiled at him. And if they made it up as, man, why doesn't the market do things to prevent us from being harassed by these vendors? Then probably that was what was behind the scowl on their face. And if they weren't thinking much of anything, they were probably the ones who passed him by as if they didn't notice him, because they probably didn't. And none of it had anything to do with him. There's an old expression you've probably heard that you would worry a lot less about what people think about you if you realized how seldom they do. We're all living in our own thought-created realities. Now, we are also all connected at a soul level, at a fundamental level, at a very deep level. And so when our thinking settles down, we feel that connection. When our thinking settled down, when our thoughts settled down, we feel that sense of kinship, that sense of brotherhood and sisterhood, that sense of me too. Me too. So we all live in separate realities, but those separate realities all exist within a oneness, within a singularity. And so sometimes we'll feel really disconnected from others, from life. Sometimes we'll feel really connected as two separate things that connect up. And sometimes we'll feel like two parts of a whole. We'll have that sense that that which is looking out of my eyes at you is looking back at me through your eyes. That which is hearing me speak is speaking. That when you are in that place in you and I am in this place in me, there's only one of us. So I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Thank you all for phoning in. We'll be back with a new one next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.